Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering today, Friday, November 22nd, 2019. Border disputes flare up between South Sudan and some of its neighbors.
We believe that these inter-state borders needs to be dealt with now, and we probably think that if it is not dealt with, it may increase the disputes and involve governments.
And some South Sudanese farmers have something to cheer about.
My medical condition. These people are still in the hospital and their condition is still critical. But as these people have come to clean this area.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. An official with Regional Bloc IGAD says the discovery of natural resources along the borders of member states, including South Sudan and some of its neighbors, has caused disputes between governments and communities. IGAD officials wrapped up 3 days of meetings in Juba this week aimed at addressing border disputes between member states, among other things. Lasuba Memo reports for VOA from Juba.
Officials from Djibouti, Ethiopia, Kenya, Sudan, Somalia, Uganda, and South Sudan attended the workshop. Kamluz Omogo is director of IGAD's Conflict and Early Warning Response, an institution established in 2002 to address cross-border conflicts. At the workshop, Omogo called on IGAD member states, including South Sudan, to resolve border disputes with their neighbors in a peaceful way immediately.
We believe that these inter-state borders needs to be dealt with now, and we probably think that if it is not dealt with, it may increase the disputes and involve governments in some of these issues, which can also lead into diplomatic disputes.
It's the first meeting South Sudan hosted of IGAD's Conflict and Early Warning Response since the country joined the regional bloc in 2011. In recent years, South Sudan has accused Kenya and Uganda of encroaching into its territory in several locations, including the Nadapal area of Kapoita State. South Sudan claims the Kenyan government is constructing a road into the disputed Ilemi Triangle, northeast of the country. A few years ago, there were clashes between the Toposa of South Sudan, the Turkana of Kenya, and the Nyangatom of Ethiopia in the disputed oil-rich Ilemi Triangle. Chol Rambang, chairperson of the South Sudan Peace and Reconciliation Commission, accuses Kenya of targeting the Ilemi Triangle because it is rich in oil. Rambang says a July meeting between President Kiri and Uhuru Kenyatta eased tensions between Kenyan and South Sudanese communities in the area.
There was a very high tension, but now with the forming of a committee, with the agreement of the two presidents, things has calmed down and that committee is working slowly. Plus local people, the Turkana and the Toposa, you know that one people. They made their own, also their own memorandum understanding.
Peter Kinuthia Thuku, Kenya's Interior Secretary, says both the Kenyan and South Sudanese governments have undertaken activities to resolve border disputes.
Both the surveyors from Southern Sudan and Kenya will go and identify the beacons and establish this is exactly where the boundaries, international boundary between Southern Sudan and Kenya exist. So therefore, we don't expect any tension between the two countries because of that small.
Thuku says the Toposa and Turkana share the same heritage and are now living peacefully along their shared border.
We have urged our people to live together in harmony, to love each other, to continue carrying out their daily life without any problem.
Kenya is not the only country involved in border disputes with South Sudan. South Sudanese authorities and border communities have accused Uganda, which hosts the largest number of South Sudanese refugees, of encroaching on Ngomoromo, Seresenya, and Ilego in Torere State. Other disputed areas are Uganda's northern district of Moyo and South Sudan's Kajukeji County of Ye River State. Rambang says both Uganda and South Sudan are working to resolve border disputes in those areas.
Though we are calming the communities not to get involved, our relation with the Ugandan government is good, very cordial. The two systems are working together and they are helping a lot as how to come out of our conflict, which is good. But this does not mean that we will compromise our territory.
South Sudanese communities near the Ugandan border have accused Kampala of building roads into South Sudan territory without consulting them. In response, Patrick Mugoya, the permanent secretary in Uganda's Foreign Affairs Ministry, says the roads are meant to facilitate trade between South Sudan and Uganda, not to grab land.
The government of Uganda has offered to open up a road. It's not that you are taking the territory. That road is going to be used by South Sudanese, by Ugandan businessmen. If Uganda says, let us extend electricity to this town, it doesn't mean you're taking the town. This is part of regional integration where what we have, we can share with the South Sudanese. What some of us have, they can share with us. And we open up these roads. It helps to improve on trade.
Both Tuku and Mugoya say their countries will welcome efforts by the African Union to help in demarcating their borders with South Sudan using old colonial maps. During the meeting, officials stressed the need to build good neighborly relations that encourage development and enhance regional integration to reduce human trafficking, youth unemployment, and terrorism. For VOA News, I'm Lasuba Memo in Juba.
Journalist and former South Sudanese Deputy Minister of Information Atem Yak Atem says a lack of training is to blame for the poor performance of some South Sudanese journalists. He says a lack of conflict sensitivity reporting has polarized some communities across the country. He says the media should report about the conflict in a professional manner to avoid a backlash from the government and the opposition.
Well, anybody with a problem will always look for somebody to blame. The diaspora are not all innocent. Some of them are with the opposition, the armed opposition. Some are with the government. And you hardly find somebody who does not subscribe to this or that group. The government in Juba accusing the diaspora, probably because there are members of opposition in the diaspora. There are also people who support the government in the diaspora. The people who are a minority are those people who say, look, you guys on both sides, there is a problem. Let us be reasonable, let us negotiate, let us come to an agreement and put an end to this war. Those people, to me, if they were the majority, they would have some weight and they could influence the events at home.
How would you rate the performance of the media as a catalyst in this situation here? Because
even when we pretend to be independent and impartial, we are part and parcel of the society we come from. There are people who support the government, there are people who support the opposition. And in that situation, you would not expect the media, the government media, to persuade people. You will not expect the opposition media to persuade all the South Sudanese. Before the war, and this is a point which I really need to emphasize, I used to have a problem with the young journalists. I don't know where they got the point that for you to be a very successful journalist, you must be very confrontational, provocative, confronting the high and mighty, and that you are the best journalist. I don't subscribe to that. I used to tell them, look, you are too small. You are small fishes. You will be in trouble. I was telling one of the people writing a very hostile opinion piece. I said, look, I can afford to say something provocative, which might displease some people, whether in government or in opposition. But most of these people in power or the ruling elite are people, most of them are people I know. And their reaction would be, if they feel that I have misrepresented their position, they will come to me and ask me, look, this is not the situation. You have done this way you have misrepresented the situation. And then we will argue. With the small people, that would not be the case. They would be in trouble, in a big trouble. You should not be combative. You should be persuasive.
You've been very instrumental in drafting the media laws for South Sudan. And as a result, there was a media bill and it was passed into what is called Media Act. Right now, and there are institutions formed out of that. One of them is the Media Authority, and they have been on the spot for not doing their job as required. How would you advise them to do their job?
The peace agreement was about to be signed, and I remember Majuma Meselia I think the oldest journalist alive, he said, look, we need to prepare because sooner or later, at the end of the conflict, there will be people, adventurers coming in, setting up radio stations, newspapers, to promote their own agendas. Now, as Sudanese, we must make sure that we take charge and be responsible for our media outlets.
That is Atem Yak Atem, a veteran South Sudanese journalist and former South Sudan government information official, speaking with my colleague John Tanza in Melbourne, Australia, yesterday. The United Nations Mine Action Group, or UNMAS, says it has cleared cluster munitions from nearly 10 square kilometers of agricultural land in Torres State, giving hope to hundreds of farmers that they can once again produce more food. An UNMAS official in South Sudan says one person was killed and eight others injured by landmines and other unexploded ordnance in the country this month alone. Demo Silva Aurelio has the story for VOA from Juba.
Dozens of women in Torete State's Magwe County sing Acholi traditional songs, describing the harm caused by munitions after members of the United Nations Mine Action Service destroyed hundreds of munitions this week. Magwe resident Anna Apio says in the last month alone, three people were injured by an unexploded ordnance in Magwe while attending a funeral.
These people are still in the hospital and their condition is still critical. But as these people have come to clean this area, I see it as something good because we will be able to go about our business without fear.
Richard Bolter, UNMAS program manager in South Sudan, says some 400 South Sudanese sites have been identified as having munitions and unexploded ordnance, nine of which are in Magwe County.
263 have been cleared. Only 138 of those remain. We're working on 10 of them right now, and we aim to clear 40 cluster strikes between now and next June, which is our reporting year. So far, 72,000 submunitions have been cleared in South Sudan by the mine action teams.
Bolster says the bombs were airdropped by the Khartoum government as they took control of the Magwe area in 1997 during the Sudanese Civil War. He says they have killed more than 1,000 people.
In this area, we have cleared 40 minefields, 12 cluster strikes, and 9 battle areas. They've cleared around 250 minefields and almost 1,500 cluster munitions in the surrounding area.
Bolsa says UNMAS has cleared nearly 100 hectares of agricultural land in the area of Ame Junction in Magwe County on the road from Juba to Nimle, which is prime agricultural land for more than 800 farmers. He says now that the land has been cleared of deadly cluster weapons and other explosives, farmers can once again access their ancestral land. Girfasio Rem is Ame Boma chief. He says as former refugees return from Uganda, the demand for agricultural land is likely to increase.
So the place where now these people work for, the coming year will be for us, for the community, for cultivation. Our people are now coming back from Uganda. There are some places remain here. If you will support also the angels to come and work for us, I think will be good. Because our community are afraid to go far from home to dig because what was remain in our area.
David Shearer, special representative of the United Nations Secretary General in South Sudan, says though cluster weapons are banned in many countries for good reason.
But what they have done across South Sudan is to get rid of the legacy of war.
Jurkuch Baraj Jurkuch, chairperson of the South Sudan National Mine Action Authority, says the country will miss its target of achieving a mine-free country by 2021 because of the 2013 civil war.
Landmines don't know the enemy, the child, a woman, and the age. It kills every person. So, and this is why we need it. We need them to be removed.
Torete State Governor Tobiolo Alberio Oromo says former Eastern Equatoria State is the most landmine-affected area in the country.
It become a problem for us now to utilize the soil for agricultural purposes because the soil is contaminated with explosive devices.
Oromo says clearing landmines from the area will allow civilians to safely go about their day-to-day lives. Bolster says in all, 1,383 people in South Sudan have been killed and 3,652 others injured by landmines and other unexploded ordnance over the last 14 years. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Children in South Sudan say their rights are not being respected. Find out more when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what's the most important value that your parents taught you?
They taught me to respect everyone. This makes me to live well with any person.
How to live together with people and how to prepare myself for the future. For example, I was taught how to cook by my grandmother. So I stayed with my grandmother and he taught me how to cook. So it has helped me because I don't always stay with my family. So that's the most important value my parents have taught me.
Being someone who might be honest in my life, even in our daily life, it's very important anyway, because in these days, many people may not be honest because of their interests.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. 2 days ago, the world commemorated the 30th anniversary of the Child Rights Convention on the Universal Day of Children. But South Sudanese children we talked to say the government has failed to protect their rights. From Juba, Viola Elias reports children are calling on the government to enforce existing laws that are supposed to protect them.
Dozens of school children stage a procession from Juba's Buluk playground to the Nyakron Cultural Center to celebrate the Universal Children's Day. Under the team, vow to end child marriages in South Sudan. 14-year-old Daniel Sabri says, while there are so many laws in South Sudan about child rights, the government makes no effort to enforce those laws. Daniel says, the government should build more schools and recreation centers to keep children engaged and reduce the crime rate.
We have rights like to education, to recreation, but most of our schools right now, even we don't have the laboratories, we don't have the libraries, so scholastic materials for children to learn at school is not there. Even the children sometimes, they don't, the environment where they study, it is not fit for them, it is not a fit environment.
Speaking in Arabic, 15-year-old Nadra Gassim says she is surprised that while South Sudan is a signatory to the Child Rights Convention, the government has done nothing to educate children across the country about their rights. Nadra says the government should be punishing perpetrators of child marriage in South Sudan.
I heard that when you impregnate a girl child, you will be imprisoned for 7 years. But I think nothing of such kind has happened. I haven't seen the government imprisoning a man who impregnated a small girl child. And I wish that the government implements such laws.
17-year-old Anthony Dogale, a deaf student, says his parents denied him his right to education because he cannot hear. Anthony says the overwhelming majority of children living with disabilities are neglected in South Sudan. Speaking through an interpreter, Anthony says parents should enroll their deaf children in schools so that they can learn to read and write.
Send your children to school because when you leave them at home to care for kettles, to dig, to do cultivation, and to do domestic work, this does not help the child. But you send the child to school because education is key.
Muhammad Ayoya, the country representative for UN Children Agency in South Sudan, says UNICEF is committed to seeing that children's rights are respected and upheld in the country.
This is an opportunity for us to make a stance against child marriage and recommit to to children in South Sudan and the realization of their rights. Now is the time for all of us to commit to children.
Rose Polino, the State Minister of Gender, Child and Social Welfare, admits more must be done to address children issues in South Sudan, including the huge number of street children in Juba. She appealed to UN agencies to work with her ministry to tackle children issues across the country.
As we have seen the day that is being facilitated today, we are happy. And also, few of the children which are having these celebrations, they are really privileged and honored to be here, but we still have some of more children who are outside who cannot get this. But we hope that the partners will be able to reach them.
Paulino urged authorities to ensure the country's law are implemented, but did not offer any specifics on what the national government would do to help protect the nation's children against child marriages and other rights abuses. More than 2 million children in South Sudan do not attend schools, putting their future and the country's future at risk, according to recent report by UNICEF. The report says most South Sudanese children are out of schools due to poverty, child marriage, and cultural norms. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
It's time for our listener comments, and once again, we received a lot of feedback from you on this week's programs. Well, Matweni from Rumbek Western Lake State writes, "My heart falls when I feel the suffering of our people. The lack of medical care, insecurity is worse, poor economic status, 7 months without salary, and we assume government is working. Why did we fight for 21 years with Sudan? To finish ourselves? A nation is not meant for two people. I am kindly calling upon on our government to improve the bad situation of our people." Moses Manuel from Juba writes, "I always tune to South Sudan in Focus. It keeps me informed about the events within South Sudan and beyond. Keep feeding us with your affirmative news." Kinyuinyan Jacob Manuan from Koboko, Uganda writes, "Hello, VOA. The extension of the revitalized peace deal has discouraged me more and more. Some people have used this period of insecurity in some places, for example, the rebel-held areas like Kejukeji Forest, parts of Kaya and Bazi. They have deforested half the land and are exporting logs to Uganda for sale through Mura and Moyo and from Busia to Koboko for their personal benefit. I therefore advise our brothers dealing in this fair business with unfair rules to stop and not behave like people who will not come to South Sudan again. This will have a negative impact on our environment in the future." Mohammed from Khartoum writes, "Hi, VOA. Thanks a lot for your nice program, and big greetings to Sunny Young of Sports, my favorite program. I was sad because the station stopped sending signal. I hope it will start again as soon as possible." We do too, Mohammed. Lecoq Joshua Losiek from Torret State writes, "Bravo to VOA for being there for us. The issue of corruption in South Sudan has become part of our life, but I'm actually happy to hear that our MPs in National Parliament have identified the Speaker in Parliament who embezzled money without his members' acknowledgement." David Sekwat in Juba writes, "Hello, VOA, South Sudan in Focus. Thanks for your service. I really appreciate and love it. On the Speaker of Transitional National Legislative Assembly, I would be very happy if he resigned sooner rather than later. It's unacceptable to misuse the resources of a country without approval and accountability." Cor Ezekiel from Juba writes, "Thanks to VOA, South Sudan in Focus. The issue of luggage theft at Juba International Airport is very serious. It's good that the airline companies have come to speak up about this, which has been happening for a long time. I attribute this lack of trained airport staff to ensure travelers' safety and their luggage. People employed at Juba International Airport acquired the job because of their ranks, not because of formal training they achieved. That's why such problems are occurring." Abraham Menyang Marial in Yumbek writes, "I want the AU, the UN, and international community to hold the parties to the South Sudan deal to account this time. in case they fail to form the revitalized government of national unity come February. Clement Juma Mbugwanya writes, I am one of the senior members of SSOA. I have strong views that the peace agreement is at risk of collapse if critical provisions regarding the reforms and establishment of unified security forces are not adhered to. I strongly believe that without addressing this matter during the extended 100 days, formation of the transitional government will not achieve its intended goal of permanent peace in South Sudan. Sunday Agak Akruor from Western States writes, I appeal to President Salva Kiir to commute Magai's death sentence because Magai didn't intentionally kill his cousin to deserve that punishment. On the other hand, death sentence, it is the violation of right to life. Death sentence is a centuries ago legal process we should not embrace. Thok Chuni Yak Kuai from Kapeta, Eastern Equatoria, writes, It is good news to hear that government of South Sudan paid $40 million for peace implementation. What we need at this time is to implement the remaining chapters in the peace deal. Dave in Juba writes, We really don't have leaders in South Sudan. Our leaders have no heart for this country simply because most of them have foreign citizenship. It's foreigners who are leading this country. Their children are out of the country leading a better life at the expense of the poor. They are only concerned about their own welfare. Mach Gabriel Garang from Boertown writes, It is indeed a moral duty of all members of parliament to remove any leader who disobeys the rights of voters. Moreover, it seems different in the case of the Republic of South Sudan, because its citizens now are begging for services from the government. Instead, the government should beg citizens for their votes. South Sudan is the funniest country in the whole world. Daniel Deng writes, Nothing will work as long as Tukyu is still the chair of NPTC. This committee should have been removed in order to pave the way for successful implementation. Peter Gotch D. Ayang and Bohr writes, Launching of the power station is good news to residents of Juba, but my question is, will the sustainability be effective? Isaac Deng from Juba writes, When we heard $40 million was given to the NPTC by President Kiir, my question was, how did NPTC use the first $43 million? Anyway, we just want peace. Chol Majak Niyak in Juba writes, I appreciate what the government and Ezra Power have done for their countrymen. This project will provide employment opportunities to youth of South Sudan. I request the government to embark on bringing more projects to the country. Kenyi Wani David in Gemiaza County, Tarakeka State writes, In case of South Sudan, whether it's 100 days or 19 days, what we need is the commitment to implement security arrangements. And for that to happen, the international community is to put pressure on both parties. Martin Manuel Wugol writes, I just came back from Eastern Bahar Naman Western Lakes, where peace and harmony exist. I was deeply impressed to see my fellow citizens dancing together, regardless of tribes, as a sign of real peace in South Sudan. Thanks for all your comments. We enjoy hearing from all of you. And that's our show for this Friday. We leave you with the song Africa Unite by Bob Marley.
Africa Unite, 'cause we're moving right out of Babylon, and we're going to our father's land. Yeah. How good and how pleasant it would be.
We've been listening to the legendary Bob Marley with the song Africa Unite. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. On behalf of the entire SSIF crew, we appreciate you making us a part of your evening. Have a great weekend, everybody, and join us again next week for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
And we're grooving to our father.